from KQED.
This is the California Report Podcast. Good morning. I'm Penny Nelson. Well, a biologist at the Salk Institute in Southern California has resigned following allegations he sexually harassed at least 8 women over 30 years. They've alleged that Inger Verma forced kisses on women, pinched their behinds, and touched their breasts. Verma has denied the allegations. Moving on, a potential expansion to California's Proposition 13 property tax break would likely mean increased home sales and higher revenues for realtors. But there's disagreement on how the measure would affect local government's finances. From KQED's Politics and Government Desk, Katie Orr reports on an informational hearing held in the Capitol yesterday.
Prop 13 limits annual property tax increases on California homes. In November, voters will weigh in on whether to expand those tax breaks. The initiative on the fall ballot would allow homeowners who are 55 or older to transfer their current property tax assessment to a new home, even if that home is more expensive. Brian Euler with the Nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office says the measure could cost local governments a lot of money in property taxes.
In the first few years, we estimate that schools and other local governments would each lose over $100 million a year, and that these losses would grow over time, probably reaching around $1 billion a year.
A separate analysis paid for by the California Association of Realtors, who backs the measure, found revenue generated through increased home sales would offset any losses. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced yesterday that he's overturning asylum protections for victims of domestic violence and gang violence. KQED's Farida Javala Romero has the story.
U.S. law offers asylum to people fleeing persecution based on race, religion, and other factors. Sessions says victims of domestic violence and gang violence are facing private crimes, not persecution. That will disqualify thousands of Central American asylum seekers, says Lindsay Tuslovsky, who directs the Immigrant Defenders Law Center in L.A.
I know from the bottom of my heart, and because I've heard so many of these stories myself, that people are going to die because of this decision.
Immigration judges must follow the Attorney General's order because they're administrative, not part of the judicial branch of government. Dana Lee Marks is President Emeritus of the National Association of Immigration Judges.
Is another example of political pressure being allowed to infiltrate what we believe should be a strictly judicial process.
She expects immigration advocates to challenge Sessions' decision. For the California Report, I'm Farida Javala Romero.
The federal government says now more than 11,000 migrant children are currently in U.S. immigration custody, many of them after being separated from their families at the U.S.-Mexico border. That includes families presenting themselves to authorities and seeking asylum. The youngsters are still taken away from their parents and sent into a huge system that provides little or no information to either the parents or the kids about how to reconnect. KQED's Polly Stryker spoke with KQED immigration editor Tyke Hendricks.
Where in California are these families' paths crossing with ICE?
Well, the vast majority of them are coming into Texas, but there are thousands also crossing the California border. Overwhelmingly, they're fleeing three Central American countries, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, with a lot of violence, gang violence. Until recently, families with children were not separated. But in early April, the Justice Department and the Department of Homeland Security came out with a new policy, said that they would begin criminally prosecuting every adult who entered the country illegally. And in the process, they would separate the children from the parents. So we are hearing from legal advocates that parents now in the custody of the Federal Marshals Service for waiting for their criminal trials are really getting no information about where their children have been taken.
So where are these kids going? Where are they placed? And who's staffing the system? Like, who runs it?
The Office of Refugee Resettlement contracts with nonprofit agencies that run shelters and sort of group home kind of situations. The advocates who've been inside say they're often in kind of bunk rooms, There are classrooms, there are recreation facilities, there's medical care, but there's also often barbed wire around the facility. The kids' phone calls are limited and monitored. So, you know, they are in a detention facility. Previously, kids would stay in these places for a month on average and then be placed with a sponsor, usually a relative in the U.S., but now the average stay is twice as long as it had been. And the government has also recently said that the immigration status of any potential sponsor who comes forward will also be checked. And so if there's a family member who is undocumented, you know, they could face the risk of deportation if they come forward. So there are questions about whether sponsors will come forward and take these kids out of these institutional settings.
That was KQED's Polly Stryker speaking with KQED immigration editor Tyke Hendricks. So California is the last state in the country to have something called an SSI cash out. It's been that way since 1974. This gave low-income and elderly people who got supplemental security income a few extra dollars for food instead of letting them get CalFresh food benefits or food stamps. To try to fix this, state lawmakers reached an agreement at the end of last week that could give CalFresh money to up to 400,000 Californians who are currently only getting SSI. The bottom line is, this is about being able to afford to eat, according to Andrew Shane, who is with the California Association of Food Banks.
It's almost hard to overestimate what an impact this is going to have in people's lives. Right now, our food banks report that a tremendous amount of their service is to folks who are on SSI. Again, often seniors and people with disabilities. And so for the $140 to $170 a month that SSI recipients will become eligible for in CalFresh, you know, that may not sound like a lot to someone with a robust food budget, but for someone who's been, you know, skipping meals, has been making inhumane trade-offs between taking their medicine, paying their rent, keeping their lights on, you know, living with no heat, this could be truly life-changing.
The deadline for the legislature to vote on the budget is June 15th. The governor has until July 1st to sign it. It used to be that many younger cancer patients simply gave up on ever having children of their own. Lots of cancer treatments cause infertility. These days, though, new reproductive technologies offer hope. But as KQED's Raquel Maria Dillon found, there's a big disagreement in California over who should pay when cancer patients want a chance at parenthood.
When Alice Creasy was only 31 years old and working as a consultant in L.A., she got some scary news, breast cancer. But then she learned something even more devastating.
Because the worst news was that it was highly likely that chemotherapy would leave me infertile.
Creasy had always wanted to have kids, someday. But she knew that chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery can destroy eggs and damage reproductive organs. Her doctors said they had to start treatment soon, so she had to make a plan right away.
Do I do a lumpectomy or a mastectomy? Do I do a single? Do I do a double? Do I do eggs alone? Do I do eggs and embryos? Do I split my cycle?
When she told her boyfriend that they had to work fast to freeze embryos, he balked and then moved out. Now she had to choose a sperm donor, too, if she wanted to improve her chances of getting pregnant later.
That was all within a 3 to 4 week period.
The problem was her insurance would pay for this surgery and chemo, but not for the hormones, the egg extraction, and the yearly storage fees until she was healthy enough to try for a baby.
It was a $20,000 expense I put on a credit card. It was never even a question. It was, I'll do whatever it takes.
Creasy was lucky. She could pay that back, but most can't. Patient advocates are pushing California to join other states that require insurers to pay for this fertility preservation process. Joyce Reinecke is with the Alliance for Fertility Preservation, which is based in the East Bay.
Every day, patients call the insurers, they're told there's no coverage, and they walk away.
In California, three bills to require coverage have failed. The last one made it to the governor's desk in 2013, but Jerry Brown vetoed it. State regulators say patients who are denied the coverage can file an appeal with the Department of Managed Health Care in Sacramento. That still requires them to pay thousands out of pocket and hope they get reimbursed later. So far, the handful of Californians who have filed these appeals have won. But doctors say the process takes up to 3 months. That's an eternity when you're treating cancer, according to Dr. Adams Dudley, a health policy expert with UCSF.
The problem with the appeals process is that it takes time, and cancer patients often don't have time. Particularly the kinds of cancers that people of childbearing age get can be really aggressive, really terrible things that you need to get into and treat right away.
The Department of Managed Health Care stands by the appeals process and wouldn't respond to questions about cancer patients who don't have the time or money to file an appeal.
I think we better send...
No, it's trying to hit its towel.
It doesn't.
For Alice Creasy, at least, the story has a happy ending. She's an entrepreneur living in Silicon Valley and single mom to 4-year-old Dante.
And I named him Dante because it means enduring. We certainly endured a lot to get to be together.
Creasy and her fellow advocates want other cancer patients to have a chance at parenthood, too. Since January, they've been pressing state regulators to issue a formal letter telling insurers that California considers fertility preservation to be medically necessary, and therefore they have to cover it. But so far, no letter. For the California Report, I'm Raquel Maria Dillon.
So what did the years 1953 and 2018 have in common, you ask? Well, they are both years when the hand on the doomsday clock has been the closest it has ever been to annihilation, 2 minutes to midnight. Back after World War II, Manhattan Project scientists started a publication called the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists as a way to draw attention to the safety of the planet in the atomic age. Each January, a board of scientists gives a conceptual doomsday clock an update. Rachel Bronson is the president and CEO of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. She's in San Francisco this week, and we asked Bronson what went into the clock being set so close to midnight this year.
We're very concerned about a deterioration in U.S.-Russian relations. These are two countries with more than 90% of the world's nuclear weapons. But North Korea certainly played a role in this. This was a time when we heard remarks like fire and fury from the president, where the North Koreans were testing their delivery systems to suggest that they could hit the United States with their ICBMs, the development of their nuclear program.
The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists will be watching what comes out of President Trump's meeting with Kim Jong-un long term and updating the doomsday clock again in January of 2019. So several dozen Korean Americans watched news coverage of that summit at a Korean-owned restaurant and bar called Piper's in L.A.'s Koreatown. The event was organized by the Korean American Coalition. Many at the event talked about the hope for reunification, or at least that one day families on both sides can visit each other. Here's Koreatown resident Grace Yu.
You can't not get emotional. It is very moving. When East and West Berlin was able to come together, people were cheering and crying as well. And if this could happen for South Korea and North Korea, it would be huge.
Trump and Kim pledged to work towards the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, and Trump promised security guarantees to the rogue nation.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. The Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children and youth at risk. And College Futures Foundation, more graduates for a thriving California. Learn more at collegefutures.org.
So that's the California Report podcast for Tuesday, June 12th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Penny Nelson. Have a great day.